Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Don Mardak, who is the author of Spiritual Healing for Today, Tomorrow, and Beyond. This book is an interesting study of what it means to actually heal as a spiritual healer. What is the state of consciousness involved in this? And what can we learn from the history of this, which I found particularly interesting, as different people have, throughout history, have taken what Jesus said about his own healing state and tried to reproduce it and tried to understand it. Thanks, Don, for joining us. Where are you calling in from?
Actually, in Florida, Delray Beach, Florida.
Great, great. Well, thanks for joining us. Would you like to give a little bit of your history and how you became involved in the study of spiritual healing?
Sure. I was born and raised or baptized in a traditional Christian church, in the Lutheran church. And when I met my wife, I found that her family was involved in Christian Science. And that intrigued me very much, because even while I was in the traditional Christianity type of teaching, I always was a seeker. I wanted to find answers to questions that I wasn't receiving in the church. And through Christian Science, I found some of those answers. But actually, that was triggered by a specific event. I had been around or involved or married to my wife for about 5 years when I suddenly started to feel a severe pain in the center of my chest. And I believe that probably had a growth of some sort there that scared the heck out of me. And I kind of searched for answers. I was actually so scared by the situation. I was so afraid of what the diagnosis could be that I refused to go to a doctor. And I was in my extremity kind of saying to myself, what should I do? And it's as if a voice came out and said, Christian Science. It just, that word came to me. And since I had been on the periphery of it all that while, I decided to go to a Christian Science reading room and ask them how you find a practitioner or someone who would give you help. And she gave me the journal, which had the directory, and she just said, you can select anyone. I'm sure you'll be led properly. And I found a man there who became my ultimate teacher in Christian Science, and he helped me through a seventh-month struggle through that first spiritual healing as I delved in very deeply to the teachings of Mary Baker Eddy. And then after I had gone through my class instructions with this man, I happened to be shopping in a department store one day, and I was browsing in the religious book department, and I saw a title that just jumped off the bookshelf at me. The title was God, the Substance of All Form, and the author's name was Joel F. Goldsmith. And that intrigued me so much that I picked up the book, perused it, and my first reaction was, this man's a plagiarist. He's stealing Mrs. Eddy's words.
Right.
But that's how I reacted to it. But it wasn't so. It turned out that Joel Goldsmith was a former Christian Science practitioner who at that time had left the church and had written his own books, and he created his own way of life, which he referred to as the Infinite Way. And so I became a student of that. I became more involved in reading a lot of Joel's books. There were more than 30 of them in print. I also met a few other teachers of the Infinite Way who became very close to me and had become my personal practitioners, and I followed that way of life. And in the Infinite Way, there were some subtle differences from the method of healing that was so prevalent in Christian Science. I learned that Christian Science was more of a mental science. It was the power of one mind over another, or just the clearing of your thoughts to the point that you could affirm the truth and deny the error and hope to see a result. But in the Goldsmith teaching, the Infinite Way, the methodology was much more spiritual than that. He referred to the other as mental healing versus spiritual healing. And in the spiritual healing practice, it required something more than just mouthing words or knowing truth. In fact, I recall in my days in Christian Science, I remember often attending a Wednesday evening session where they would have people giving confirmation testimonies of their healings that they had had. And often they'd say, I stated the truth, I denied the error, I did this, I did that. And then it was as though I were enshrouded in light. And I had this wonderful feeling of warmth, and something happened. And I realized that it wasn't the words they were saying that was bringing about the healing. It was that feeling that came to them. Well, Joel Goldsmith taught that that's what we must seek. He called it a God experience.
Right.
So in the healing work that I've been involved in ever since then and has governed my life, I have learned that you have to get to the depths of your consciousness where you feel that presence that gives you that wonderful feeling of warmth and peace that brings the healing. And that takes place primarily through meditation.
It does. And you know, when we're in the healing room and that energy engulfs us and we become one with that energy, there may be a transfer of energy to the patient. I don't know whether you know about Dr. Norm Shealy's work and some of the other scientists who have studied spiritual healers, but they find that there's a gigahertz energy that actually gets transferred to the patient, and it affects the patient's energy field. So that would be like the step down, you know, the spiritual energy, which of course is multidimensional. Then you see an effect in the physical field. It's not really the physical, but it's more like the auric field of the patient, if you can measure that. Valerie Hunt at UCLA measured that field, that the spiritual healers were affecting the patient's field. Now, one patient that Valerie Hunt measured was a healer that healed in all spectrums of the color spectrum, and probably even higher. So she had like a big range of frequencies that came out of the healing, and she actually regenerated a thumb from a metacarpal amputation. It completely regenerated. Now, you know, this is the kind of healing that Jesus did. You know, it really is. You know, the degree of healing, which is completely against our belief system that it could happen. But she documented this kind of healing. So you have the spiritual healer who gets in this state that we're going to talk about more later. But then we've had scientists at UCLA and then Dr. Norm Shealy showing that this actually does translate into an energetic change in the field accompanied by these miraculous healings. I think it's really very exciting.
Yes, it is. That's very interesting to me because even Joel Goldsmith often said that he didn't know what brought the healing about from a physical standpoint, how to describe it.
It's energy. It's energy. It's gigahertz energy. Right.
Once you achieve that consciousness, it took place.
Things change. Yeah, miracles happen. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's really kind of neat.
They also believe that the Jesus healing practices were not a one-time event or some miraculous event.
No, they were all the time,
scientific principles that are still available to us today and could continue to function in our lives.
I believe that that is true. I believe that, now I would say this, I've been working as a spiritual healer for, I don't know, probably over 20 years now, but I would say that not everything is to be healed, and you probably have understood this. Like if I will start a healing sometimes, have you ever heard of reflex sympathetic dystrophy? Very, very bad pain condition? When I start to do a healing on those, I will often get that it won't be healed. You know, I'll get that information that I can relieve the pain. You know, the healing can, well, I don't do anything, but the healing relieves the pain for a period of time, usually a week. But the condition only is healed by something other than the healing. So, you know, sometimes we're told that things are not going to be healed through us, you know, through what we're doing.
Well, obviously, we are not walking on water yet, and therefore...
Exactly.
Actually, I have proven that. I also have a home in Wisconsin, and I am able to walk on the water, usually in January and February.
Funny.
Once I can do it in July and August, I'll feel real good about myself.
Well, you can walk on the water, but you're likely to get wet. That's what... We all can walk on water, but we're not quite that good yet.
Mm-hmm. But on the subject we were just talking about, I do believe that everything can be healed. oppressive, damaging weather can be stopped in its tracks. A nuclear holocaust could be stopped if somebody were to rise high enough in consciousness and truly
That's
in contact
true.
With the infinite invisible. But it's our failures as healers, as people who haven't achieved that level, the Jesus consciousness yet, that we can truly do that.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, some of the information I'm getting that, and it's happened with cancer, you know, that the cancer is not going to be cured, that kind of thing. This information is coming to me as, and I don't know what level it's coming from other than it is true. I mean, the information that comes in does come to pass. But, you know, there are reasons that people get sick that have to do with their spiritual growth. You see, that's what I think happens. And so if they are going to be deprived of a lesson, you know, it may be premature for the healing to occur. But I think you're right. Eventually, the healing can occur. You know, eventually.
Also,
it may not be the right time.
Sure. This may be a little contrary to the whole philosophy of this discussion, but what I like to call the new mysticism of today, which was for me an offshoot of the Infinite Way, is more about uplifting the entire consciousness of mankind than it is about just specifically healing individual cases of sickness or disease. Because even the greatest healing that you could perform, and probably the greatest one ever, was Jesus raising Lazarus from his tomb.
Right.
The bottom line was that Lazarus still died, and it was only a few years after Jesus left us. So all that Jesus really did was change the date on Lazarus' tombstone. So, and that's not to put down spiritual healing, because that's what the title of my book is all about. But healing comes in so many ways and in so many aspects of our life. It's not just the healing of sickness or disease. It's the cure, overcoming of financial lacks or dangerous or serious economic crises. It's the correction of problems in human relationships. And all of those things that make our life what it is.
Yeah, that's very true. So, you know, the message is really that all of us should spend time in meditation and contemplation in order to access that state of consciousness so that we can improve conditions here.
Right. The ultimate goal, as I said, would be to find that our work is so beneficial to the world that it does uplift the universal consciousness of mankind. In fact, I just read a quote the other day, I believe it was from the Dalai Lama, who said, if we could get every 8-year-old to meditate, we could change the consciousness of mankind in one generation.
That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Well,
and go ahead.
Well, we've had a meditation group here that meditates weekly and sometimes up to 3 or 4 times a week when guided since 1990. And there's no question that meditating with a group of people is very much more interesting and beneficial than just simply meditating alone.
Right. And I believe that we can come together as a group of spiritual brothers and sisters who actually can create a circle of Christ consciousness.
Right. So that, you know, that is something that people can take away from, you know, this and other, I'm sure, other, you know, sources of information have suggested that. It's a very good way to change the course of history. You know, if we're headed down one path that isn't very, you know, has a lot of suffering and problems to it, it's a way to change that. Atlanta has been very blessed with, you know, a lot of tornadoes and other storm systems have gone around Atlanta. We've noticed this. One of the people in my meditation group lives up in Delonico, which is about, an hour away. And he notices that the storm systems, really nasty storm systems, come down and then just go around Atlanta because he's watching it on the Weather Channel. And, you know, I always wonder, we're not the only group in Atlanta, but there's a number of groups in Atlanta that meditate and pray. And is this energy similar to the TM studies done in cities with high crime rates, when they documented that when the meditators were meditating, the crime rates dropped in the cities, or is the nasty weather able to be vectored around the city because of this?
Yes, I believe that. In fact, I know people in Hawaii who have worked together often for many years, and they've avoided typhoons that were predicted, and it just turned in its...
Probably tsunamis, too,
Right. And that last one that was predicted for Hawaii did very little damage at all.
Exactly, yeah.
Out there who are working along these lines.
Yeah, that's very interesting. But now there's a huge number of very spiritually active groups in Hawaii. I'm in touch with some of them. And there's a spiritual hospital there that I visited twice on the Big Island and actually, talked with some of the leaders there about some of the problems they were having and possible solutions. So, there are groups of people working in different cities that may very well be protecting the city from, financial downfall, weather, and even crime. So we don't know what the meditation does. I mean, we're not meditating specifically for anything, as you know. I mean, we're not, it's not a mental exercise. That's important for the audience to understand. We're being guided by spirit, I believe, but it's not a mental exercise like in Christian Science. We're not mentally trying to stop weather patterns,
It's all about letting the will of God flow. I use the word God occasionally in the writings, obviously, because I've come through those teachings that used it in that form. And yet, much of the world has this wrong concept of what they think God is. For so many people, it's that painting on the top of the Sistine Chapel done by Michelangelo, which shows the old man with the white beard reaching down to Adam and so on, when the real God of the universe is really life itself. One of the gifts that Joel Goldsmith gave us is he described God as an infinite consciousness. Mary Baker Eddy used the word mind to describe God, but then she also used the word mortal mind to speak about the mind of man that was causing all of his problems, and that caused a lot of confusion because she also referred to a human mind. So I see this as a different effect. I had attended a lecture one time, a spiritual lecture, and a man was there who was a clinical psychologist, and I asked him the question about brain and mind. And he said to him, in his work, field of work, the mind is an aspect of brain, and brain is an organ of mind, which was kind of going around in circles. But then I discussed the fact that truly there is something beyond both of those, and to me that is what we would call consciousness. And the biggest point of my book and the biggest point of our philosophy is that if there is a God, then God must be infinite. The Bible states that God is infinite, omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. And an infinite being has to be then all that exists. You can't have an infinite God and something else, because God then, or the infinite life force, call it what you will, consciousness, must fill all space and must be the sum and substance of all existence. Therefore, it has no opposite. There can't be any opposing powers. There can't be a devil fighting it. And even the mind of man can't fight this infinite consciousness. But then, go a step further, that infinite consciousness must appear in living form. It must have expression to exist. And so God appears as the true spiritual universe. This infinite consciousness is appearing as your identity and as mine. Each one of us is an individualized manifestation or expression of the one infinite consciousness. The Bible says that man was created in the image and likeness of God. What would the image and likeness of infinite spirit be like? It would have to be a spiritual being. And that's our true identity. While we see a physical body, and while we seem to be struggling with physical problems in a material universe, the absolute reality is that we are individual expressions of the one infinite consciousness, and we are consciousness itself. And that's the goal for me in meditation, is to rise out of this body in the sense that I truly feel my identity as consciousness and the consciousness that is really the God consciousness in individual form. That's what can bring healing from our perspective. I know there are many other approaches to healing, and many of them are very effective.
Mm-hmm.
But for this particular new mysticism that I am writing about, it requires that kind of an experience.
Let's see, on page 40 of your book, you point out that Matthew records the following words of Jesus. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is single, your whole body shall be full of light. I think that's one of the best descriptions in the Bible of this state of consciousness.
That's right. In fact, that chapter that you're reading from is one of my favorite chapters in my book. It's called The Spiritual Body of Light.
Right.
And frankly,
it's a good one.
I had read that somewhere else. I had heard about that, but I never experienced it. And so one time when I was in a very serious or difficult time period in my life, I had been struggling again. It happened to be where I felt a severe pain in what appeared to be my right lung. And it just was insidious. It wouldn't go away. And I thought of all the possibilities of what it could be, and I didn't like any of them. It could have been tuberculosis, it could have been emphysema, it could have been cancer.
None of those are good.
And so one evening, I decided to take it on, and I went into my library, and I said, if I have to sit up all night, I'm going to handle this thing. I'm not going to take this any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into a deep meditation, and I used a specific exercise that helped me very much in that. Joel Goldsmith had taught us that there was an exercise that we could use that often would help us see our real identity. And in that exercise, he asked us to look down at our feet. And then he said, think of those feet and ask yourself the question, are those feet me or are they mine?
Ah, there you go.
And if you do that, you start to say, oh, no, those feet aren't, they're not me. I am something more than that. The same is true of my legs and my hands and my arms. Are any of those limbs me or are they mine? And in this particular exercise, if you sit in meditation and do this with your eyes closed and then think of your internal organs, your stomach, your liver, your lungs, your heart, the intestines, anything, the digestive system, the other systems of elimination, even the reproductive organs, and ask that question, are they me or are they mine? And remember, almost every one of those organs has been transplanted in the past from one person to another. Some organs can be taken out and you can live without them, or some can be shrunk in size. Even think about how people have had a new heart inserted in their body. They go into that surgery with an identity, with a belief of who they are, and when they awaken, even though they no longer have their old heart, they are still that same person, that same identity. So therefore, that heart is not them.
Right.
The same is true when you take this exercise all the way up to the top of your head and start to realize that even the brain and the mind are not you, but our mind, because you use that brain, you use that mind to calculate with, to think with, to plan, and to do things. So you must be something separate from all of that. And then I asked the question, well, then what am I? And the voice said, I am consciousness. And I saw myself as conscious, living above and beyond this body. And at that time, I had my first out-of-body experience, where I truly rose up above and beyond my body, and I saw myself looking down at it, sitting in the chair in my library.
That sort of proves that, that you're not your body, huh?
Right. And then I sort of asked the question of the infinite, well, do I really have a body? And the voice said, yes. And out of this consciousness, it projected another body. But it was a translucent manifestation of pure energy.
Right, your light body.
Then I asked the next question, is that the body of light? And the voice said, yes. And I looked at it again, and I could see that there were no organs or functions in that body.
Yeah.
Like the other one. And when I saw the other body, my original body, it became translucent. And I saw a collapsed lung. And that was amazing to me. But I then rested in that spiritual body of light, and I eventually fell asleep. And when I woke up the next morning, there was not another pain. The pain that had been there for 7 months or 8 months had disappeared
Because
of that meditation.
That's
so
amazing.
That is what I feel our goal must be, is to have that mystical experience that lifts us up beyond, above and beyond all physicality into the true consciousness that we are, and then to manifest our spiritual body of light.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story.
Right, and I wish we could have many, many more of those, because each time we when we have a meditation of that magnitude, it always brings healing. And it doesn't matter what the circumstance might be, but when we don't bring the healing, it's because we're not reaching that level. We're just doing gyrations of the mind.
Right.
One of the titles of a book of Joel Goldsmith is Beyond Words and Thoughts. And he stresses the fact that while we have the thinking mind, and we sit down in meditation, thinking some thoughts, maybe doing a contemplative-type meditation, we must transcend all the words and the thoughts of this human mind and get into the true mystical consciousness that we really are.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So, you know, a lot of people have these spiritual awakenings as a result of a severe physical illness. And, you know, it may be that it may be really true that while things are going really well for us, we don't really seek God. It's only when we have adversity in relationships, finances, health, that we actually seek answers.
Right. It almost is invariably an illness or a problem like you're describing to trigger us, the catalyst, to get us to really get into the spirit.
Right.
We often make the statement that problems are opportunities. When you have a problem, it's an opportunity for spiritual growth, because nothing
else
would drive you into the spirit to be willing to take those steps that are required. It's too easy to just live a life of ease in this world and to enjoy the fruits of our labors. And if we're successful in life and have a good amount of income and a sufficient supply of money and other things, we can get caught up in that and lose our way. When all the while, our true spiritual supply and our true spiritual identity is where we find our source of life.
Well, I don't, you know, if you're a member of a spiritual group or if you meditate on a daily basis, you know that you really look forward to those meditations because it feeds you in a way that other things don't.
Right.
Energetically, spiritually, whatever you want to call it, it's a different kind of, I don't know, it meets a different need.
Yes. In fact, if we go to a class given by a spiritual teacher, it's not the words that we hear that matter.
It's the energy.
Right.
Yeah.
The words are only the letter of truth, but the actual spirit of truth that stands behind those words is what must become the key to the experience,
that's
what makes it a true God experience or a Christ experience, rather than just the attending of a class by one human being instead of another.
So what advice would you give people who maybe have never meditated or don't really understand what these states of consciousness are all about? Should they maybe seek out a healer? Because if you're with a really good spiritual healer, you'll feel the energy. That's true.
Sure, but they aren't always that easy to find, and they may not be near where
you're
living
either. Yeah, that's true.
And so one thing is to read books like my book, Spiritual Healing, and other books like that. There's been a wealth of information out there in the writings of so many people. As I mentioned, the Infinite Way books of Joel Goldsmith, there are just so many guidelines in those books that teach us the way. But the ultimate step still has to take place in consciousness, because you can't get healed from a book and you can't get healed from a lecture or a church service. It takes the consciousness that has generated the energy that brings the healing take place.
Right, that's true.
But the first step, though, if you are going to meditate, now, if you recall, in Spiritual Healing, I have two sections in the book. The first part speaks about the spiritual nature of existence, and the second part, the title actually is Spiritual Healing, the Practice. Now, while the first part describing the nature of existence, which must be understood, you have to start with the allness and the infinitude of God. If you don't have an infinite God, it's very difficult to make anything proper happen in your life, because you're living a life of duality and separation. And according to the Infinite Way teachings, the prime problem that we must seek is not the kind of thing that psychosomatic medicine would tell you to look for. In the early days of Christian Science, Mary Baker Eddy sent out a list of suggestions to people saying that cancer was caused by jealousy, and heart conditions were caused by anger, and something else was caused by hatred. And after a short while, she realized that was a mistake, and she recalled all those papers, but a few of them stayed out there and almost became the basis of psychosomatic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been proven to not be the case, because according to the Infinite Way teachings and according to Joel Goldsmith, the only cause of all of our problems is the belief in duality, the belief in separation from our source.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is oneness.
And that's the original sin, is the belief in separation.
Exactly. The original sin of all of Adam and Eve was the belief in two powers and the acceptance of two powers. And if you get back to oneness and overcome that belief in two powers, you find the cause of the problem.
Right.
And that is not a personal thing. It's not that you're believing it. There's a world belief of separation.
Right.
Everyone believes that they were born into this world. And if you accept your birth 40, 60, or 80 years ago, you're going to accept the death as well. You have to transcend the concept of a birth belief and achieve the level of understanding where you realize that you are God incarnate, and that this infinite being is appearing as your life and is living as you. It's an eternal life that is living through you.
Right.
There's an interesting description has been given about what eternal life really is. And it's been stated that eternal life is like a grand infinite circle with no beginning and no ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I have several other books out besides Spiritual Healing. One is called An Adventure in Mysticism, and one is called Armageddon and the Fourth Timeline. And in the Armageddon book, the master teacher, these are fictional stories, by the way, and I wrote those for a purpose because I found that if you write spiritual truth in a story, it's much more easy for people to grasp it, and it can awaken people much more easily than a textbook on the subject. For example, about 40 years ago or more, Richard Bach wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull and the book Illusion. And both of those books found a tremendous audience as they awakened a lot of people to this new higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so my other books are stories like that that bring in the spiritual teachings within a story. But one of the points that is brought up in the book Armageddon, the teacher is explaining what life is like, and he has the people sit down and listen, turn, close their eyes and turn within themselves and try to visualize an infinite circle. And then within that circle, he said, now put a set of parentheses out there. And that parenthesis is really the life you're living right now in this world. The left bracket represents your birth. The right bracket represents your death. And as long as you live within that parenthesis, you are living a life of limitation, a life that believes you were born, that believes you will die, and suffers from sickness and disease. If you can break the barriers of the brackets of the parenthesis, you can live within the circle. And when you live in the grand circle, you're living in the eternal flow of spirit, in the ultimate reality of life.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. And you look at everything differently, too. You look at everything differently. I mean, you don't grieve when people die. You don't,
don't fear death for yourself.
You don't fear death.
It is an extension of the life that you're living, the life, because you also had a life before your birth. If you're in that infinite circle, you realize that your life was established at the beginning, if there was such a thing. Eternity has no beginning and it has no ending.
Well, when I was 3 years old, I can remember myself talking to this child and knowing that there is no death. When my grandparents died, or when my grandfather died when I was six, I remember I wrote a letter to my grandmother telling her that he hadn't really died. I found it later. So when I was six and seven, I knew this truth, and I've never grieved a death. My parents are both passed. Of course, I still communicate with them, so I know they're not dead, you know. So, you know, I've always lived in this knowledge of the higher spiritual truth. I mean, when I was six, I was writing a letter saying, you know, he's not dead.
That's tremendous.
It was interesting because I didn't remember writing it, but I found it later.
I have
but,
found
yeah. But that would explain why I've never
solely
had grief for any death, you know. I've never
right.
done it.
And young children can be so receptive to this message. I know
mm-hmm.
when my last two grandchildren were born, I remember being there, and on one of their births, my daughter was having a problem, and my son-in-law called and said, it's just not coming, and she needs help, and the doctors couldn't induce it anymore. And at that moment, I went into meditation, and I saw this being as just the pure flow of life, the life
mm-hmm.
that is God, the infinite circle of life, which is flowing through my daughter. It was also flowing through this child. And
mm-hmm.
he just was a perfect spiritual being, and I had one of my highest moments, my highest mystical moments of pure realization at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the birth then suddenly just came instantly, and it was perfect. But then after that, it was a real miracle, because as soon as that child was able to open his eyes and see me, you just knew the love that he felt. There was such a bond
yeah.
that we had at that time, and to this day, we still carry that bond.
Yeah.
And, he has been such a special child, so illumined. Maybe like
well, I bet you know. I bet the delay in birth was because he just didn't want to come out. You know, he needed that.
Right.
He needed that extra love that you gave to go through the birthing process, which of course is a hard process. You know, if you've ever read the description of what it's like to have a vaginal birth, I mean, be the child going through a vaginal birth, it's very traumatic, or can be traumatic. You know, it's. So the child just doesn't want to come out. I think that's what happens. You know, they go, nope, don't want to do it yet, you know.
I believe that, yeah.
That's really true. You give a little love, a little encouragement, and then you can help him or her go through the process. Just like with anything, you know. I mean, when I have to get people through, I'm a surgeon, you know, I have to get people through very difficult surgeries. And I do it through love. You know, I do it through bonding with them and being with them and telling them it's going to be okay. And, you know, we do it through love. That's how we get people through things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
some years ago, there was a lady practitioner in the Christian Science movement who was working in the back areas of South America, and she was doing wonderful healing work. And when someone asked her the question, was, what are you doing that's making this come about? And she said, I just love. And that was the
right.
only answer, I love. But again,
right.
we don't have enough love within us to truly do that. It's the divine love that is God that is flowing
through us. It comes through us, right.
We
That's
become
right.
the instrument through which it flows. And that
mm-hmm.
love flowing through us can go out into the world and bless the entire world.
Yep, that's true. That's very true. So you do have a, the second part of the book is a, I guess a, it's not really a meditation, but it's a healing
it's
wisdom.
Exactly. How, oh, the last part, yes. Beyond, the first two parts, one gives the definition and description of what life and existence are all about.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of that portion then is the practice itself, giving the steps on meditation. How to treat supply, how to treat how to treat hope of protection against disease. But then beyond all that, I have a section which I call spiritual healing wisdom. And what these
mm-hmm.
are primarily meditations or that have come to me in meditation, words of truth as I see it, that I felt were very profound, and I put those into the book. You could actually read one of them and you'll understand. Like one of them here says, I merely become aware of truth. I don't make it so.
Mm-hmm.
It already is. Harmony is. Peace is. Joy is. Spiritual wholeness is the eternal reality. Now, any of these meditations of themselves coming from the book aren't going to heal anybody, but they could give someone a step to work with. They could take that into their own meditation, starting with those words.
Mm-hmm.
I've always remembered something that I read a long time ago. We've all heard of the great American patriot, Thomas Paine, who wrote during the American Revolution. And he wrote a wonderful document called Common Sense that literally jarred the people into the rebellion that became the revolution
right.
and ultimately this great nation. But Thomas Paine also wrote another essay that not as many people know about, and he called that one The Age of Reason. And in the Age of Reason, he makes the statement that many people called him an atheist because he wasn't accepting biblical approach to life or the Christianity. And he said, I do. I accept a God. I also accept all the possibilities of, that God can communicate in revelation and all the rest. But he said, if Moses had a revelation and then tells me what he heard, and if Isaiah and Jeremiah or even Jesus had a revelation or Paul and tells me what he had heard, what I'm getting is hearsay, not a revelation. I'm getting their word.
Right, yeah.
What I want is my own revelation of truth. I want to feel that I've heard it from the source. And so while the wisdoms at the back of the book, which came to me in meditation, were powerful healing meditations for me, to someone else they are just hearsay, but they're a great starting point. If you take any of these, I think they're very strong. Here's one: the eternal flame of spirit that is burning within my soul illuminates my way through the dark passages of material sense. My oneness with God constitutes my oneness with this divine light of truth. Or another one: there is a divine voice within me that speaks louder than the clamor and chaotic dissonance of this world. It is the voice of God revealing and disclosing itself as the essence of my being. And I really enjoy that when I receive those more than anything else. In fact, some time ago I was giving a lecture, and I made the statement that one of the greatest things I appreciate about this mystical way of life and this mystical teaching is that we don't have to just read the words of others. We don't have to accept everything that's presented to us in this world, because we have the ability to turn within and get answers to all of our questions. At this point in my life, I can truly say I don't believe I have a question that hasn't been answered about life and spirituality. But those answers came from within, not from books or from other teachers.
Yeah, that's a very important point. We do have a guidance system that we can access no matter what. And this was shown to me when I was deathly ill with a pneumonia. I thought I was going to die. I didn't die, but I was that sick. And I had a dream as I was coming out of the pneumonia that there was I was going through different scenarios in the dream, you know, like I was going down a waterfall and underwater and then up on an island and then, you know, in various scenarios. But each time I had it was given to me as a light, you would see at Christmas, you know, the strings of light on a house. The light was always with me. No matter where I went, even under the water, the light was there. And the message in the dream was that you will always have your guidance with you, no matter what. And all you have to do is follow that guidance.
That's terrific, right. One of the things that I believe, too, is that there is not a need for any mediator between God and man. We have a direct link to our Creator, and we can become one with that. We are one with that Creator. We merely need
Well,
to
that guidance is that link. Yeah, that guidance is that link. Exactly. And it is important, as you say state in your book and in what you just said, that you seek out your own spiritual experiences and don't just go with the experiences of others, because they're much more powerful and more illuminating to you personally. And then you experience what we're talking about rather than just listen to us talk. Which is a lot better. And let's talk a little bit about supply and protection, because I thought that section in your book was interesting. Talk a little bit about why supply is not what we think it is.
Right. We always think of supply as being money, or stocks and bonds, or real estate, or some tangible items that we own that give us a certain net worth or provide a source of income for us. But true supply is a spiritual capacity that we have deep within our souls. It's like when Jesus could multiply the loaves and fishes and feed all the people that were there. He understood the spiritual nature of supply. it's so much greater than what we can see in the physical world. And if we tap into that spiritual supply and realize that we have an infinite abundance of that, we can allow it to flow through us. And one of the first ways we can get that to truly get triggered in our life is to start sharing what we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know the phrase from the Bible, cast your bread upon the waters, and more will come back to you. And you don't do it because you want to get more coming back to you, but you do it because you feel it is right. I have had so many examples in my life where I've seen this principle in action. We had hit a very deep, very low level, let's say, of struggling with the finances at one point in my life where I had a business that failed and it almost really took a toll upon us. And at that time, when we were really destitute, we had a situation where my wife had lost some of her jewelry, probably the only key jewelry she had, and we felt it was stolen from us in a certain situation. And we checked and found out that because we had been in such a low level of income and in such a destitute state that we had let our insurance lapse and we weren't even covered.
Mm-hmm.
So we just lost it. And then there was a time when I was in meditation, just working on the normal principles that I'm working at, and a voice came to me and said, your jewelry has been restored. And I,
mm-hmm.
So the first thing I did is I ran around to our suitcases and in different closets in our house trying to find the jewelry because I thought it must be there, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But that afternoon, I went out to the mailbox to pick up our mail, and when I came in, there was a letter from the insurance company, and it said, even though you hadn't paid that last premium, there was something in the policy that gave you coverage carrying it over, and all of it was restored to us, and we were
Whoa.
Able to replace all of that lost jewelry. And I've seen that it happened often in my lifetime. There was a time, again, when I was in this very difficult state of almost poverty, and I was
mm-hmm.
visiting a friend of mine who was in the same business that I was in, and he was struggling even worse than I was. And I was in his store one day, and he said, we can't even have dinner tonight. I'm so broke, I can't even afford to buy groceries. And I looked in my pocket, and I had $26 there, and I gave it to him because
mm-hmm.
I just felt so sorry for him that he needed it so badly. And again, within a matter of days, hundreds of dollars came flowing in from unexpected sources that I didn't
mm-hmm.
even know were out there. And it happened just because I started the flow and got the supply going. So one of the very first steps in getting yourself to increase your supply or have a healing in that area is to become more benevolent and to cast your bread upon the waters. And if you don't have even $26 to give to someone, it doesn't have to be money. It might be service.
Right.
It
can
be
service,
charitable
right.
work. And all of this, but you're giving.
Yeah.
If you start the giving, you're opening out a way for that to come in from behind, and the flow will start again. But one
yeah,
final
my,
point in, that, in
uh-huh.
that chapter, though, it's also forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a situation where someone has done something to hurt you in some way, if you're holding a grudge against anyone, even if it's Osama bin Laden or Saddam Hussein or whoever it might have been, you're stopping up the potential flow of supply. One of
mm-hmm.
Jesus' greatest commandments is that, you know, you have to forgive 70 times 7, as he said to his disciple. And forgiveness is so important. And if you can't muster up the ability to forgive them, then again, turn within. Because I had a situation like that where a very close relative had hurt me at one time in a very big way, hurt me financially, and I couldn't forgive that for anything. I really held that grudge for a long time. But I knew
mm-hmm.
that those bad feelings were in contrast to everything that I knew and understood, that it was holding me back in my spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I went to a Reiki healer one day, a lady that was an acquaintance of mine, and a subject we were just talking, and she asked if she could give me a Reiki treatment, and that subject came up. And after that treatment, I found that I could forgive. The forgiveness
mm-hmm.
began to flow through me, and I no longer held that grudge, and you can't imagine the flow that began after that. How I
yeah.
achieved a situation in business that was beyond my wildest dreams, and the source of supply continued and hasn't stopped to this day. But it all
yeah.
started with forgiveness and with understanding the spiritual nature of supply.
Yeah, my manager here said that it was just amazing to her that whenever we needed money, you know, like to pay taxes or to you know, to pay something that was due, property tax or something, that money would just flow in, like from weird sources, you know, it would just come in. Like you say, the supply was there. And we would always have enough money, even though she couldn't imagine that we would have it, it would come in. And then there's another story. I was doing a healing on a patient, and she asked me what would this heal her problem with silicone toxicity, because she had ruptured breast implants. And I said, I don't know what it will heal. You know, I just the energy is just flowing into you. I have no idea what will happen. And it didn't heal that, because that requires surgery usually. But she called me back and she said that her sister called her, and they had been exchanged or fighting for about 30 years. Right. Yeah, exchanged. Yeah. So the point is that when the energy comes in, that, you know, whatever needs to be healed is up for healing. You know, like for you, when you went to the Reiki practitioner, this problem with your relative was up for healing. So that energy was used for that. Right. And then you were able to do it.
Well, I'd like to bring up the relative to supply, and that's the fact that you have to understand the intangible nature of substance. The true substance of what this all is about and supply. While we think in terms of money, bonds, and stocks, and tangible assets, the true nature of supply is spiritual. And when you
think it is.
That context, it has the ability to flow. And I've often used certain analogies of other things in life that are like that. Just think about this. Think about love. If you can give love to someone, it doesn't take any of the love away from you. In fact, by sharing love with other people, you tend to get more love in return.
Right.
The same thing is true of knowledge. Think of every teacher on the planet who has taught a subject to students. And that teacher realizes that through many of their classes. I had this happen to me in giving a spiritual lecture where I was sharing with students, but so much more was coming through to me that I was the one who benefited the most from that sharing. And what did it cost me to give that knowledge? Can I have any less knowledge if I share knowledge with someone else?
No,
more usually comes in because of the sharing. And so you must make, if you're going to take any mental steps in these processes, the first step is to always impersonalize the problems that are coming to you. Realize that they're not physical conditions that have to be changed or cured. We don't like to deal with problems at the level of a problem, but that these are mental suggestions coming to your mind for acceptance or rejection.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is true in every area of life. The same thing is true within supply. These are mental suggestions that are coming to you, and you can see the reality of the picture. That is really, this is this entire universe and your life is God incarnate, God appearing in individual form.
Right, that's very true. So what about protection?
Well, the same thing. You know, we could often say, why did this come upon me in the first place that I have to try to heal this disease? What if we could have prevented it from coming? And I believe that's a very important part of the whole practice, that many times people who are practicing meditation, who are making contact with the source, are protected from things that might come to others or might have come to them if they hadn't been working in this light. And so that's the greatest reason to do it. If you can be protected from many of these things coming into your life, I know there have been several times I was driving on a road and whatever happened there, I was so close to an accident, and I don't know how it was avoided, but it was avoided. And I believe that's that kind of protection that I often speak about that you can receive. But protection also means freedom. That chapter that you're referring to is called Protection and Freedom, and it brings freedom from fear, freedom from oppression, freedom from oppressive governments, or anything else, from any tyranny and spiritual wickedness in high places, call it what you will.
Mm-hmm.
You can be free from all of that, even though it seems to be going on all around you. You can be protected from the onset of diseases, from economic catastrophes,
You can.
From
that's
dangerous
true.
Inclement weather and all the rest.
Yeah,
but that's
very true.
Why you work at all times. It's not, again, for any purpose. You don't have to have a specific problem in mind that you're working on. You're working only to feel the presence of God and to have that presence become the fullness of your life and the essence of your life.
Well, that's great. Great information and great ideas. We're coming up on the end of our hour, Don. Would you like to give some contact information?
Sure. First of all, I have a website that people can go to. It's donmardak.com. That's donmardak.com. And I have the entire philosophy is stated there. There is a section called Healing Wisdoms, and some of those wisdoms that are in the book Spiritual Healing are there. There are reviews of one of my books that's gotten a lot of positive reviews recently. The message and philosophy is stated there. A website is given there. On that website, it also does give contact information, phone numbers, and things of that nature. And the book can be purchased online right there, or you can go to Amazon.com and purchase any of the books.
And what are the names of the other books?
Well, the first one was on Adventure and Mysticism. That's a kind of unique book because it's a very nice story. An idea had come to me quite a few years ago of a young boy who was traveling in the Holy Land with his parents, and while they were in Jerusalem, he became separated and ended up in a place with some wise men, some mystics, who were giving it from Tibet, actually, who gave him his first spiritual awakening, taught him how to meditate, and opened up the future of his life as a spiritual being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, comparable to another story from about 2,000 years ago when another young man of 12 years old got separated from his parents. And the young man's name is Eric, and it's just a fun read. It's a very easy read. But during the meetings with these men from Tibet, he also heard about a book that they had in their possession, which was called The Gospel According to I Am. That gospel was actually a book that I was going to write separately, but I made it part of An Adventure in Mysticism, and it's actually the second half of this book. As you know, every religion on the planet can justify its position by using some Bible verses. The difference between Protestantism and Catholicism, Christian Scientists, Jehovah's Witnesses, or whomever can use something in the Bible to justify their position. And it's no different from metaphysicians and people in the spiritual religious teachings. And so I wanted to compile all those Bible verses that I found in everybody's writings, everywhere I ever could find them, that related to the metaphysical approach to life. And that's what the Gospel According to I Am is. It has most all the important Bible verses that are relevant to our mystical teaching, but they are also in topical headings with titles such as creation or identity, spiritual healing, reality and illusion, good and evil, prayer, and so on. And so that's what An Adventure in Mysticism is all about. The next book was entitled Armageddon and the Fourth Timeline. That book is very unique. It's actually a sequel to An Adventure in Mysticism. The young man is now 30 years old, and he is called back to Tibet by the master that he met when he was a young boy, who was still alive and functioning. And he said he wanted him to, because of the conditions going on in the world today, because of this potential of a nuclear holocaust or because of the war on terror, he believed there was something that could be done to change the future, and that, frankly, gets involved in time travel, a subject that I've always found intriguing. But again, all the way through both of those books, these same mystical, spiritual principles are being taught. And they're taught in such an easy way to understand because it's all part of conversations and circumstances that make them very fun, a very fun read.
And then, well, thank you.
We're discussing today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak to your audience and to be with you.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it. We've been interviewing Don Mardak on spiritual healing for today, tomorrow, and beyond. Thanks, Don, for joining us. I appreciate it. And you're welcome. Next week, we have Tom Palandino with Scalar Energy, and then my friend Joyce Kovelman, who wrote a book, Crimes Against Humanity, will be on the 18th. And then Timothy Wiley, Revolt of the Rebel Angels, the Future of the Multiverse, on the 25th. This has been Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health radio show. Join us next week.